different ideas of the best way for them to receive services, both in our schools but also in the community. So the specialist ends up being that driving component, connecting systems, as well as providing that direct support to students. Where it gets super complicated and fun is through the funding formula. And so we're working through this process currently. But Pay for Success is based on some legislation that passed a few years ago. And frankly, the state hasn't engaged in this model to this point. So last week, they passed House Bill 1823, which provides the opportunity for the state through and with community partners to be able to fund work like this in Jeffco. So in essence, we are thankful that our Community First Foundation in Jefferson County is willing to fund 50% of the program cost up front, which is about $800,000. And the state is agreeing to fund the other 50%. There is a structured evaluation, an independent evaluator, and by meeting success outcomes that are tied to graduation, so we're looking at attendance, behavior, and course completion, the foundation itself, over the course of the project, can actually be refunded their investment in the project. I think the thing that's important at this table to know is there's no financial investment per se from Jeffco for this particular pilot. However, it gets very complicated on the other hand to figure out the way money will travel from state and foundation to Jeffco and back through again. So with that, we're excited, and hopefully there'll be a contract coming to you next month. I'm sure Craig can talk more about that. But ultimately, I guess the way I look at this is these are some of our most impacted youth that we have in our schools, and we haven't served them as well as we can. And so this gives us a great opportunity to not only improve practice here, but serve as a model for both the state and hopefully the nation. With that, any questions?
Okay, with that, we'll take comments and questions from the board.
Thank you. This is gonna be great work. Appreciate that you are moving forward on something that's very innovative. I hope that we win the grant, that we achieve all of the dollars back because of great outcomes. And maybe then, if we can afford it, we take all those dollars we get back and put them in a scholarship fund so that these students can access whatever comes next for them after graduation, which I realize is the time when they are becoming entirely independent of family and institutions, which makes that very hard to do. Thank you for the work. I look forward to updates, and I appreciate you guys taking on the challenge of navigating complicated systems and for partnering with Community First Foundation to make the way forward a little bit smoother. Look forward to hearing more as it moves forward.
I just want to say thank you as well. And I attended, it was an event related to kids aging out of the foster care system, and was really enlightened by that crossover of kids that are still in our schools and then losing those services and what through other organizations what we've been trying to do to continue to support them. So thank you for taking this on and wading through. It's really important, and it does impact our students.
The kids that are in foster care, man, they have a wide variety of challenges that they're facing, and sometimes school is the least of the challenges. I'm interested in drilling down in the role of the specialist for a minute. Does this person take on the role of an advocate, or is it really just helping the child navigate their educational experience, or is it broader than that?
Yes, and. So advocate, navigator, case manager, and connector of services. So they meet directly with the student also to help build, we'll call it social capital, so helping that student also learn to be able to advocate for themselves, but really serves as a connector. So ensuring that the student has access to the appropriate mental health services, if family treatment is appropriate, helping to ensure that that happens. On the education side, some of the things we've seen over time with just our pilot is just being able to pay that extra attention to the additional supports that they might need within the educational environment that might get missed otherwise, and then the same in the community. So they have the luxury also of being able to travel with that student through the other systems and make sure, one, that we don't duplicate services, but also where there's resources available, make sure that we're being attentive to that student's needs.
One example of how we step in and help is, in times gone by, we used to have students, when they were placed out of home, then they would go to the school where that new family who was hosting them lived. And having kids be able to stay at their home school makes such a difference, because they're already being taken away from their family, to lose friends and teachers who know them and care about them is very difficult. So whenever possible, we try to navigate that. In some cases, it's not doable because of the circumstances of being removed from the home, and we want to protect a student who may otherwise be in harm's way if somebody knows where they go to school. But that's just one example of how this person helps to navigate. I think it's also important when we look at those statistics about the number of kids who actually graduate from high school. These are kids who experience foster care at any time during their K-12 experience, not just kids who are experiencing it in high school.
So this is going to require partnerships with lots of providers, not just within the school arena.
Absolutely. And it really builds on partnerships that we have generally, but also through the pilot with the youth in the upper primary grades.
I think you somewhat addressed this, or I know that you're at least thinking about it, that both of you are at least thinking about it, but I'm curious about the role that mobility plays in us being effective in these endeavors. Is there anything that we could do is it a factor? And if it's a factor in our effectiveness, is there anything we could do to reduce it?
Yeah, absolutely. Mobility is a huge factor. And right now we are. We've engaged in, and ESSA actually has some different requirements related to moves for youth that are experiencing foster care. And so we have a process by which the caseworker from Human Services, as well as school staff, meet every time a move is considered, and you go in with the presumption that they should stay in their school. And so we try to articulate, whether it's through our transportation, private transportation, or the foster family's ability, keeping that student in that particular school. When those moves happen, we also have identified what best practices around transition look like. And so in those cases where a student would still have to move, working with those receiving staff to say, you know, here are 30 practices that we know are impactful to help this student transition in a healthy way so they can still be successful. So on both ends, we're trying to push on exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, good, thank you. Other comments, questions? And I think what we want to say to the team is thank you for the work you're doing. Thanks for the work you do on behalf of our students who need a little extra support. So thank you.
Yeah, and I just have to give a little shout out to your entire department for across the board the work that you do. I think on one of our budget line items, we're hopefully providing some more resources for your department to do some greater work, because we really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. With that, we will move to the final item on our budget today. Our final agenda item today will provide clarity, will be an opportunity for the board to provide clarity on the final direction for the 2018-2019 budget, which we are scheduled to adopt on June 7th. We began this discussion last Thursday and made, I think, real progress as we worked through that. Today we will have Dr. Glass and members of the cabinet assist us as we review the work that we did last Thursday, and I think this is really an attempt on our part to make sure that we are prepared and will be prepared to adopt our budget in June. Dr. Glass, anything you'd like to add?
No, if that's okay, I'll just jump right in.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you. Last Friday, we received some requests from the board to re-examine the budget conversation, and so this is an addition onto our meeting today. I regret that some of our finance team isn't here. They had a conference scheduled in St. Louis for government finance, and so several of them have already planned to be there and attend that, but we do have Jason Hendricks here to help with us. Help us today as we think through any changes. Just backing up and thinking through where you've been, since February, you've had four regular meetings where there was an update on the budget. from Kathleen Askelson. You also had one quarterly review, which we also talked about how the district's budget was performing in the current year and what options that would create for the next year. We did have one study session where we talked about cabinet priorities primarily, but also the larger sort of macro budget questions. And now we're having this second study session. So I just wanted to remind you of the steps that we've taken to get to this point. Since February, there have been a number of changes to the budget process, most of them positive, frankly. From where we started at the beginning of the budget process, even in December or January, before we came to that first presentation with you, our revenue assumptions have increased, and that's good. We've also had some expenditure assumptions fall off, the PARA one being a major element that we were expecting to have to pick up some costs for. That may still happen, in which case we'll have to get back together and figure out how we're going to balance this budget if the legislature doesn't come through as we expect them to. But that's fallen off. We've also been able to remove some of the cabinet priorities. We've been able to fund some of them with existing allocated dollars, and so they're not things that we have to process through or think about for funding for next year, because we can handle those with the allocated resources that we have. We've also had a preliminary negotiated agreement reached, which is providing steps and lanes and a 3% cost of living. There's some other aspects of it, but from a financial standpoint, those are the major components. So there's been a lot of change over the past few months as this budget has developed and we've gotten here today. We met last time, the direction or understanding that we had was to move forward with the negotiated agreement, move forward with the SBB allocation that was put in place at the end of last year to continue to flow that through to schools and really sort of make it permanent or a part of the SBB allocation. We also talked about an additional SBB allocation that was based around school improvement and equity, and the district staff was to devise some mechanisms by which those funds would be allocated to schools. So effectively, it's another addition to SBB. It's just focused on schools that are struggling or that need improvement and focused on equity. And we talked about the cabinet priorities, both those that have been funded with underspend or available dollars and those that would be added to that. And as a priority of the board, you wish to add an additional $500,000 to the capital transfer, bringing that to $1 million. So can you do the mirror cast, DJ, and put that up here so we can sort of look these through? So in some technical wizardry, DJ and I have figured out how to cast over the internet from my computer to that computer and on the screen. I'm not quite sure how it works. There must be science involved, I think, but it's pretty cool. We figured out how to do this. So I put together just a couple of simple spreadsheets to simplify the conversations that we've been having. There's no new information on here. It's just repackaging what we've been talking about to try and present that more clearly. So you see here, the steps, lanes, and quartiles and the costs associated with those, the 3% COLA that's on there, what it costs to maintain the SBB allocation, the cabinet priorities that were funded through underspend, the cabinet priorities that were not funded through underspend, the school improvement equity SBB component that we discussed last week, and the additional capital transfer. So that's sort of all of it, all the new expenditures that we've discussed up to this point. So you see the total new cost, $45.1 million new dollars. So as your superintendent, one major goal that I have today, and I will advise you strongly, is not to add anything else to the expenditure line of this equation. We are done spending money, or we should be done spending money. As the board, you certainly have the authority to move beyond that. It will put us in a deficit spending pattern, which I would not advise at this point. So this is a really good year. It's exciting. We're able to do a lot of positive things, but don't add to this. That's my first recommendation. The other thing that I added on here was sort of a solidity rating scale, and I did look up to make sure solidity was a real word. It is. So it's how solid, what I mean by that is how solid are these budget assumptions. So, and I tried to think through what would be the impact if we reversed or backed away from them at this point. So how much are people counting on this happening? So you see steps, lanes, and quartiles. I gave that a 9. Again, the board has the opportunity when it finalizes the budget and approves the preliminary negotiated negotiated agreement to reverse on that, but I think it would be disruptive if we were to do that. And also, a slightly less so with the 3% COLA. I mean, from February, we've been talking about steps, lanes, and quartiles happening, and a COLA of some form happening. So the COLA is a little less firm, but still pretty solid. And then we step down to maintaining the SBB allocation. That's something that the board put in place last year. We have talked about flowing it through in some form. So, but it was communicated to schools that it was treated like one-time money. So I think there would be a surprise in the system if we decided to do something else with this at this point, but it's not as solid as some of the other things. You could move it around. And then you've got cabinet priorities, both that were funded with underspend and cabinet priorities that were not funded with underspend. I gave those a 5 and a 6, and that they're not as solid as some of the other things. But especially those that were funded with underspend, we're making plans on moving forward and executing those, mostly because we're using resources that the board already gave the authority to the administration to use. And so that's why that's slightly stronger in solidity than the other one. The cabinet priorities not funded with underspend, which we started to go line by line through some of those, and certainly at this point we can move that stuff around, so that may be some of what you want to do today. And then the things that I gave one were sort of things that we added last week. So they're ones because we weren't really expecting those to go through in those forms, and no one is making current plans on what to do with that money. So that's the annual, the additional capital transfer of $500,000. They weren't expecting to get that, and so that can be something that we can add in or not. It's very flexible at this point. And also the additional SBB and the $2.4 million. I know for some of you, that was the first time you'd heard that that money was available, and we came forward with this idea around it. So we certainly could look at using that in a different way. And I don't think there would be huge implications system-wide if we were to look at that. So that's sort of the macro level and the solidity rating. Again, this is solidity rating was something I made up last night. It's completely my one person's opinion about what the impact would be if we're moving these around. And then I went down to, so that's micro level. I also went to a macro level, and we have it up here. It's difficult to read, but we can work through. This is the only font size that I could get to fit all of it on there. So you have, let me start at the bottom. So this section that's in red here were the things that the cabinet removed. And I know there was some discussion around interest in adding back the long-term substitute pay increase, and also this element around moving the sub-drivers from part-time to full-time. So you see the cost of those two elements associated there. Then we've got the green area here in the middle. Those are all the things that the district funded with already allocated or already authorized money. So we were able to knock out all of the must-do. We classified things as must-do as there would be a significant disruption or problem if we don't do this. So we were able to knock off all of those and remove them. But again, they're not completely solid. If you want to go back into that and start moving around dollars in that group, we certainly can. And then there's this last group, outstanding cabinet priorities. You see most of the things are in the should-do list, meaning it's not quite as urgent as the must-do list, but we still think it's pretty important. And the may-do list were really things that would add capacity, but they're not going to be devastating or something's going to go in reverse if we don't do that. So I also added in, just so you have some idea of magnitude, some of these percentages. So you have the percent of the total cabinet requests here, and then the percent of the total new costs of the $45 million. So I just wanted to put that there. So if we get in a big discussion around something that's like 100 grand, it's out of a $45 million increase. So we to keep in mind the magnitude of these things and to recognize that we're dealing at the margins with a lot of this. Okay, this is stuff right on the edge of should it be funded or not. So I wasn't sure how to proceed from this point other than to just open it up to you and see what goals that you had. My goals for today are 1, not spend any more money than we already have, and 2, to get some clarity for our budget and finance team as they build the budget over the next couple of weeks to bring it back to you for approval in June.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Glass. I want to say that I think on this topic today, we probably need to hear from each of our board members. The goal, in my mind, at least for today, is that we do have the direction that we need prior to June, and so we need to deal with any issues that any of you may have. Please go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. Sal. And I wanted to say that I brought you know, I was confused after the last meeting Thursday night, and so I just want everybody to know that what I was specifically unclear about, and so thanks for putting this on the agenda today, because I wrote you an email and it's here, so thank you. I was just unclear after our conversation about the $2.4 million, because Brad was talking, Mr. Rupert was talking about a potential crisis fund. That's how I heard him talk about it. And then and we were all talking about, you know, Amanda was talking about equity. I would love to put this towards equity. And I was, you know, understanding what you said, Brad, knowing that, you know, it is important to be taking care of situations, and that's what these guys are, they do, and I feel like there's a contingency fund. So I think I was clear Thursday saying I don't think it needs to go in that kind of a fund. So then I didn't understand what we were doing with that 2.4, so I just need clarity. And if it's going to go towards equity, great. Before we finalize the budget on June 4th or whenever that meeting is, it's a lot of money, so I'd like to see the like, is it all going to go to small school equity? You know, there's a lot of different kind of inequities in the system as far as, you know, the schools right under Title I, you know. So I just, whatever your recommendation is for it, I want it to be very transparent and very clear, and I'd like to see it before June 4th, before, for me to be able to find, you know, I just think it needs to be, it wasn't clear to me at the end of last meeting what exactly this was going to be, and now I'm seeing it as a, so I would like, that's the discussion I need to have, and I need to make sure that we provide clear direction for that. That's a big chunk of money.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that I feel like we were able to do that Thursday night. And then another thing we never talked about, and I don't even know if we needed to, the underspend allocations. I was just wondering if for transparency's sake, we should have that discussion for 2 minutes, 1 minute, whatever. Everything I said in my email, did I miss something?
I don't think so, yeah.
Okay.
So it's not really surprising that there are some questions around the $2.4 million, because it was an idea, frankly, that we cooked up at the board table and thought it was a good idea. I agreed, and I didn't have a lot of detail around what that would look like. But that night, I reached out to Karen and Christopher, your chiefs of schools, and I said, pull us together a team on how we're going to allocate that. So they're working on that right now. How I envision this happening based on the conversation we have, so I want to check my understanding and make sure this is what your intent is that it's an SBB allocation. So it's money that's going into schools, right? This is not a district fund. It's an SBB allocation. It's going into schools, right?
Excellent.
And so what we have to do as a district is figure out what is the mechanism by which the dollars are allocated. And so what I heard was schools that are, we're using a different word than crisis, because we have another fund for that, like if a principal resigns mid-year or we have a school that's got a culture issue, we've got a way to handle that. But that's not really what this is about. It's really looking at schools that are struggling with improvement or there's some additional resource that they need at the building level. And can we identify which schools those are? A good starting point would be for us to use the school performance framework. Any schools that we've got on priority improvement or turnaround are places to start with. And then also look at which of those schools are serving high at-risk populations, highly impacted populations. Those lists almost always are the same. Wherever you poverty is concentrated, you also have performance issues on standardized measures. So I think what we'll end up doing is thinking about what are some ways that we can create a per pupil allocation going to schools that are on priority improvement or turnaround and that are serving at-risk students and what that looks like. I don't have the answer to that today because our work team is still meeting. Does that help with?
That helps a lot. I didn't get the idea Thursday night that it was going to be part of SBB, which I am very pleased about. Would you consider, or do we think it might be important to have small school factor equity included on this?
We have a small school equity factor already built in, so if the board's wish to examine that further, we could. I think we're doing something different with that than we are with these resources. So it would be kind of a school improvement fund slash small school fund. It's not always the case that small schools are struggling schools. I mean, sometimes you have larger schools that are struggling schools. So my recommendation would be keep us focused on your priority improvement turnaround schools, your high poverty impacted schools, and so we'll devise a calculation to flow it through to them.
I do want to acknowledge that when I compared last year's approved budget and this year's proposed budget, the size factor adjustments look different. There has been some work done recognizing that we have our K-5 schools, some of them are floating smaller. So those adjustments I did see programmed into SBB differently this year, recognizing some of the shifts of student populations with the sixth grade transition. So I appreciate that, and I did see that reflected in the SBB allocation.
And I wanted to call that out as well, that I think I tried to say that from the table last meeting, is that we continue to adjust that model, and there were adjustments made. And then I thought I heard Kathleen say, we are still looking at other adjustments for 40-60% FRL in small schools already built into our system. So that was what I was hearing. And so I echo the need for clarity on what we were doing with what I thought was 2.3 million, but now it's 2.4 million. Just in terms of, and I recognize these are all small.
My mistake. It is 2.3. Sorry.
Okay.
This was a 10:30 spreadsheet.
No,
last night.
And I'm
so
not
watch
being,
this.
I'm
we'll
not
change
being
it right
critical
here.
In an effort to get clarity. Sometimes I just, so yes, it was 2.3. But I do believe we are continuing to work at those models and wanted to share that. It's not always a small school that has those additional equity factors so that we stay on track with that and appreciate that clarity.
And actually making it 2.3 brings our new spending exactly at $45 million. So.
All right.
I really would like to weigh in support of changing the name of this fund. I felt like I made a mistake at the board table using the term crisis. I couldn't think of another term at the moment. But having thought about it and listened to you, Dr. Glass, I would really support the notion that this is a school improvement fund. Let's approach this from the positive side, and let's invest these dollars in improving schools that may be in great need right now.
I want to make clear that the reason that I had come up with the idea and made the request was not necessarily for a school that's on priority or improvement, but if we don't do something, it's for sure going to get there. And I want to give our professionals, our leadership, our achievement directors, and higher leaders the ability, the flexibility to use your good judgment, plug in a human resource here or there, and not be confined with the excuse that we don't have any funding. I want to make sure that you have the flexibility to do that. Now, Karen came to me after we had that whole discussion and said, you know, rest assured we're doing something about that school. Fine, in the future, I just don't want the funding to prevent us from doing a smart preemptive move to prevent a school from getting further down the spiral. It's always much easier to put out a small fire than a large fire.
And I
want us the ability to do that.
I wholeheartedly agree, and I want to just propose a different metaphor, because many times when it comes to either poverty-impacted schools or schools that are on improvement plans as priority improvement or turnaround, they aren't fires. They are oftentimes extraordinary learning communities navigating some of the biggest challenges, and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they are in crisis, and they need to change the learning culture. I agree with you that this should not merely be dollars that are driven specifically to priority improvement turnaround schools, but that we should not be surprised that a lot of dollars may be used there. I do think school improvement equity is the right way to approach this. I want to lift up again a story that we've heard at various statewide gatherings. One of our neighboring school districts had one priority improvement turnaround school. They're in a different situation than we are. They're a much smaller district in a much more affluent community. And they drove hundreds of thousands of dollars into a single school community and over 4 years moved that school out of that status. one of the things that I think is critically exciting about this allocation is that we are indicating that this is an ongoing investment. We are indicating that we are not simply identifying labeled schools, nor are we're not limiting ourselves to that, but we are absolutely making sure that we're working on equity and improvement, and we're doing it in a sustained way, because I like to highlight the good. We had a couple years ago 9 prior to improvement turnaround schools. We only have 3 this year. Next year, we may not have 2 or 1. We might have 5. That when I visit these school communities, they talk about weathering that roller coaster of standardized outcomes when they know that every day they're doing as great work that they can. They're working hard to have stable teaching staffs. It matters to me that we're taking a step forward on equity without tying our hands, limiting these schools or perceiving them as mere deficits, because I really do think they have a lot of assets going for them, but worthy of investment and worthy of the kinds of supports that may need to be integrated into their normal school budget in an ongoing way to meet ongoing needs for kids, because poverty is persistent and its impacts are persistent. But our persistent investment can help those school communities do even better what they're already doing. So I appreciate the tolerance for a little bit of flexibility as you all move forward with the plan of how best to do that, but I do think it's pretty critically important that we do it in a way that's serving students and honoring those school communities and the power they have to do that transformative work if given the resources.
And I want to say one more time that I have a lot of small schools, and while they're very grateful that they have $200 more for the equity factor this year, because they have less than 375 students, they're still not able, it's not making up the difference to provide the resources that a school over 400 can. So I would hope that you would study that further. I could be wrong, but that's what I'm hearing from my principals of my smaller schools, and I want the level playing field for every one of our students, and so I would appreciate a new study on that, and maybe we might find out that size factor can be leveling the playing field if we allocate more per pupil for our buildings with less than 375.
I think that's something. I mean, this is the district's 3rd year on SBB now. Is that right?
Going into four.
So every year there have been adjustments to it, including the size factor this year. It changed from the previous year to now, and I expect it will change again. We made some estimations on what we thought the sixth grade shift was going to do, and so that's built in. But once it actually plays out, I expect we'll have to make further adjustments again.
And then, the 3.7 that's going in, that's under the formula that we have in place, correct? So they would be getting that 3.7 for this year's budget year, understanding they're getting it, you know, really at the end of their school year, but that would go into before their next budget year. And the anticipation is that 2.3 would be doing that same thing in terms of a cycle.
Yeah. So the 3.7 is going into the base factor,
yep.
Right?
Yes.
So that's roughly $50 per student that the whole system is going to get. So this is going to address class size, programming issues across the whole system. What will be also beneficial is from this point forward, really probably not until the next budget cycle in the 19-20 budget cycle, you'll start to see schools use it for staffing, because last year it was told as this is one-time money. This year we've been holding it back until we've made a decision. So they really haven't been able to staff or hire with it now, and we're going to add it in late. So we will probably still see some one-time uses that come on this year, or some late. You may see a principal decide to take a reading interventionist from 0.5 to 0.75, or you'll see some moves like that. But then going forward beyond it, it'll become part of the base factor and be rolled in. So this is a sort of a staffing or class size reduction factor that goes in.
Thank you for that clarity. I think that was important to understanding the process of what we were actually doing. So.
Yeah, the 2.3 is focused on, you know, schools that are in need of improvement by some mechanism that we still have to decide. So I think that's a really good use, because it does allow some flexibility for us to target resources into schools that are struggling.
I do just want to highlight one of the things that Ms. LaSalle communicated, I think will be valuable. I think it's outside of this budget conversation, but I do think that this conversation of what does it mean for a school to be right-sized or right-sized enough to be sustainable, some of the issues like sharing AMP teachers, which is a reality for a number of our schools, and not necessarily horrible, but it's probably not ideal either. Split grade configurations, some of the challenges of being a small school, not having a colleague with whom to collaborate because you're the sole teacher of a grade or the sole teacher of a content area. I do think that might be worthy of something to incorporate into a board agenda item next year to say, what does it look like to rightly support those schools? What is it that we expect to deliver to all schools as a shared understanding despite size challenges? And then what are the mechanisms that a school can navigate those challenges when they exist?
I think putting that in a future agenda, you know, next year sometime is fine. I think I want to make this comment right now. We do not have unlimited resources. In fact, even though we're better off this year with the assumed state funding, we are not where we need to be. We are not anywhere near close to the national average. And by the way, I worked in this district once when we were very close to the national average in terms of funding per student. And it was a different world than we are living in today. I want you to know that. And so as I hope the day will come when we have more resources to allocate, but where we are today, all of these decisions are value-driven and very difficult to make.
If we're done with talking about the 2.3, I wanted to circle back and there are some things that were removed from the cabinet recommendations that I think a couple of us had questions on. One was the removal of the classification of bus drivers. The second was the removal of teacher pay. And I just wanted to understand the reasoning of those two things.
Sure. I would preface my remarks by saying that there's nothing on the cabinet's list that isn't important or that doesn't meet some need. Otherwise, it would never have appeared on there. So that we don't have anything on here that we didn't, at least in January and February, think this needs to get funded. It really became a process of looking at the available dollars we have, juggling all of our other needs, and then thinking about where can we maximize the dollars for the greatest positive impact. When it comes to the long-term substitute daily rate, what this would do is if you have teachers that are working more than how many days, Amy?
90%. We adjust rates after 60 days. We also pay long-term subs who jump in on day one if they're going to be in a long-term assignment. We know about it.
Yeah, so that's where it kicks in, is people that are on long-term placements. I think it's a good thing to constantly be evaluating and trying to keep competitive your substitute pay rates, including this one. And so it's prudent for us going forward to consider, are we market competitive for substitute rates? Are we paying them well enough that we can attract talent? In this case, the reason that it was removed is that while this would be a good thing to do, Jeffco currently doesn't suffer from a lack of substitute teachers, so the market is sort of telling us that we are paying adequately. We could and should be doing more. I don't disagree with that, but we don't have market data to tell us this is an urgent priority, which is why it's on the may-do list and why it fell down here. So not arguing that it's not an important thing, just compared to some of the other things, we didn't feel like it was as critical. And then on the bus drivers, I think this was an issue of sort of fairness. We felt like it was the right thing to do. It's also an increase for some of our employees who could use some additional resources, and we've got some market data here that tells us we're underpaying this area. So we've got shortages here. The reason that this is on here as being removed is that it's a big ticket item, right? This is almost $840,000. And so we juxtaposed it against several of the other things that were in the cabinet priorities and thought, if we've got $800,000 and it has to be spent on this or it has to be spent on this, where would we rather have it go? And so that's why it fell off. Again, it's not that it's not important. It's not that it's the right thing to do. It's just juggling all these other priorities and trying to think about where can our dollars make the biggest impact.
Those are two of my clarification questions, too, so thank you for answering that and reemphasizing what you just said, Ron, that these are all still priority items that we really feel that we need to be funding, and I'm sure there are more because these are just the ones that actually made the high priority list. There are a lot of other priorities as well, but to not lose sight of that in terms of these populations for us and the significant impact they have on all of our students in education every day.
Those were two of my questions as well. I'm wondering, are we competitive with the long-term sub? I mean, I know we're not having problems filling the positions, I think I understood you saying, but that's different.
Amy's done some analysis on that.
Than being competitive.
So our fill rate for our substitute jobs is at approximately 95%. And so whenever my team is at some of the local HR meetings that monthly occur called CASPA, people are envious of that. Same thing when we go to some of the national conferences, because we do keep up with a strong fill rate. The challenge is when you have 5% of your classrooms unfilled and you're a large district like we are, that's a large number of classrooms, and we are impacting teachers in our building every day because they have to figure out ways to distribute students among other classes, which becomes more difficult in small schools when there's only one grade level. So you can see how these problems exacerbate. So I don't mean to make that 95% is a positive, but it's still a challenge. So within that, Ali, to address your question specifically, we pay $115 a day for a long-term sub who's going to be going in and essentially taking over the planning responsibilities and delivery responsibilities for the students in that classroom. So they are stepping into a classroom. They're not using daily sub plans. They are becoming the teacher. So for some comparison points, Brighton's paying $125 a day after 20 days. They pay their retirees $130 a day right off the bat. Doug Coe is paying $150. Adams 14 is paying $150 after 20 days. Boulder's paying $140 after 20 days. Our initial recommendation was to increase our rate to $145. We wanted to add $30 a day to get it to $145 a day. When this went through the press of the cabinet conversations, which again involves priorities across the entire district, all of which are important, we dropped that to $130 a day, which is the budget line item that you see right now. Does that help? So one more comment. It is sad. It is absolutely it's hard. One more comment. It's really hard for us to measure the absence of finding a long-term sub, because here's what happens. When one of our schools has a need for a long-term sub and they post it and they can't find a long-term sub, then they start to put in daily sub jobs and they start to get someone who can pick up a daily sub job so that the classroom is covered, or they resolve to figure it out internal to their school. But it's really hard for us to measure the absence of a long-term sub because they've done some troubleshooting and gotten someone in there to cover the classroom. So I'm not meaning to make it difficult to give you an answer as to how many long-term subs can we not find. It's hard for us to know that unless we were to survey our schools. But this is absolutely a critical piece that we need to stay focused on and be thoughtful about.
Now you've answered my question. It's painful. Yeah, thank you. And thank you for pointing out, 95% fill rate's great, but, that 5% of unfilled is probably as much as any other district's unfilled, even if it's their 25%, because we're huge. So that's what sometimes when on these charts, I like to see numbers instead of percents when we're comparing.
You have both here. So if this is a priority that the board values, we can spend $100,000 on it. So here's the part that gets even more difficult. Where are you going to take it from? So the floor is open. If this is something that you wish to fund, then we need to move something to make it happen.
I want to ask a question before we begin that discussion, and that would be, what was the total amount that we originally had in? And frankly, were we to maintain that amount in the budget, would we have the impact that we might be hoping to have? Would it impact things in a positive way is a question I'm asking.
Do you mean the what would the $140 have cost? What was the...
Well, what was the original line item that was in our possible proposed budget? What was the cost, total cost?
107,000.
$107,000. So then my question is, okay, if we wanted to find $107,000 somewhere else, are we going to have an impact with the 107 that we're allocating into the substitute salary? Is that going to have a positive impact that will benefit our children? There you go.
Yes, and here's what we should do if we want to do that, which is exactly what we did about 3 years ago when we had some movement on how to look at subpay. You may remember we had a pilot project we ran where we were trying to encourage more subs to pick up more days, because as we looked at the data, we had plenty of subs, but we didn't, if we could just move all of them to pick up more days, then we could close some of that gap. So if we want to do this, we could always run it as a one-year pilot program, and we could be sure to set up the systems in place ahead of time to ask that question. You know, how many of our schools are looking for long-term subs? Is the pool more robust at $130 a day than it was at $115 a day? And are they able to fill those jobs? So we could certainly take a run at that and make sure that we are gathering that information to be able to answer that question.
So I think the question before us that's been proposed by at least a couple of you, and I had it somewhat on my list as well, would we want to try to go back into the budget to find $107,000, decreasing some other expenditure by that amount?
And then my other clarifying question before we get to that, just in terms of my understanding the dollars that we have, do we have 14.5% in reserves, or do we have 16% in reserves? Because there was a slide that said 16, and there's a big difference there. And if this is a pilot of a one-time dollars, okay, 100,000, that we don't maybe need to move all the other things around. I just wanted to know how much we actually have in reserves.
That was confusing.
Right, so as it stands with the cabinet list intact, this would drop our unassigned reserves to 13% with the increased spending that we're talking about. If you obviously add the 100,000, that's gonna make a minor change to that.
Understood, between 14.5 and 16, there was a big...
Yeah, so we started the process this year with 14.5% of unassigned going into 18-19. With the increase in cabinet spending, it was dropping it to 13.3.
Okay, because we had a slide that said it was actually 16%. So my note said it's actually 16%. And
right.
I'm sorry,
and I'm
so sorry to do this to you, because you're like, really?
No,
I'm just
okay.
Here I just clarifying that I think that was a correction that was made at the board table, that it was actually 16%.
So just going off of Kathleen's document?
Yeah.
It is 14.5% when we're looking at our original numbers going into the proposed.
Okay.
Before the change to the governor's proposal.
Just because we have to recognize that we're upping spending, which
right.
means...
Got it. Okay.
That's including all those steps and levels and COLA and everything else.
I so appreciate that.
And then
that
we're taking that additional piece, and it's going to drop us down further. But we're still in the safe zone. That's good.
Perfect. Thank you.
For a district this size, a 13.3 reserve is a healthy reserve.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if it's...
Go ahead.
Just a... provide direction in the sense of I would like to advocate for the long-term sub pay rate pilot coming from reserves, so we don't have to move around anything else that you guys have recommended.
Yeah, I have two reactions to that. One is it's not really a pilot. If you add salary to people, unless there's a budget shortfall, you're not really taking it back. So this is what we're doing going forward, I would say. And the second is, back to my primary goal today, we're not spending any more money. Board, you can override me and tell us to do that, but I say take it out of something else. If you want to spend that, find another spot you want to take it from. And we can help you with that.
What's your reaction to that? What do you think?
Our recommendations that are here before you are that's the package of them that we have. But if this is a priority for the board, I mean, this is your responsibility to help us, your representatives of the community, to say this is what the community values, this is where you need to put your resources. So if increasing the long-term substitute pay is something you as representatives of the community feel is important for us, then we need to lift that up off of the what's been removed list, put it in the what's going to be funded list, and figure out where we're going to take the dollars from.
I'm going to not answer that question yet, but ask, without making a budget change, can we gather some of the information that Ms. Weber indicated so that we know how many long-term sub-teacher positions have been filled, how many have remained unfilled? Whether or not we budget for this, it seems like that would be information that would be really valuable to us as an organization moving
forward. I think you've got really plenty of data that would tell you that there's a rationale to do this. And so I think, you know, here's what, some ways you could do it. You know, going back to this sheet, if you want to fund this, drop your cap transfer down to 400,000, you've got the money. Drop your SBB amount down to 2.2, you've got the money. Go through any of these cabinet recommendations and pick 100 grand off of them, you got the money. So that's what I would say to do is let's find a spot and say it's coming out of here.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'd propose that we drop the SBB to 2.2 and fund this with that 100.
Okay.
Give or take a $7,000.
I am okay with that, and I recognize that the bus driver number is big. Could we just have a short dialogue? Because I am confident that that number also could also be larger, and we cut that one down. I don't want to be remiss recognizing that that's a dollar, but in terms of future priorities, conversations, I know I felt that a majority of us addressed that from the board table, wanted to give that a little bit more time if we can. I appreciate your feedback on the subs.
And maybe
as well.
I could answer that
Thank
from
you.
A staffing perspective,
because
that's exactly what was driving this particular budget item. And just one quick go back, I want to be clear. The budget number that you see for the long-term substitutes is based on actual data of numbers of long-term subs we paid this year. The piece that's hard to measure is where was there an absence because we didn't have any long-term subs who were willing to pick up a job. But I didn't want the board to leave the table thinking we had not based that number on actual long-term subs, paid the current long-term sub rate. On the bus drivers, we've been working really diligently with Steve and his team to address what is a crisis that happens every time unemployment goes down in the country. All of a sudden, in every school district, it becomes harder to hire entry-level people because the marketplace is such that there's a lot of competition for those individuals. So my team has been partnering diligently with Steve and his team over the past 2 to 3 years to address that. And we have looked within the transportation budget on multiple occasions to, in fact, adjust entry-level rates while being thoughtful around what our current bus drivers are making, as well as looking at what the surrounding jurisdictions are paying and trying to ratchet that up a little bit. This particular item is directly related to a concept that many of our classified employees are hired in first as a substitute. So food service, custodial, bus drivers, they're hired in as a substitute and then they can compete for and move into an ongoing job. We believe that's a competitive disadvantage in the marketplace. We believe people come to Jeffco wanting a career and wanting a commitment to a job. And so my team has partnered with those three different divisions within Steve's group to, in fact, make it possible for people to come to Jeffco and not be in a substitute job, but be in an ongoing job. So on the substitute bus driver piece, we already pay substitute bus drivers a certain amount of money for a certain number of hours. What this does is it transforms those individuals from substitute jobs without ongoing hours that are assured to a job that you might consider is still not going to be an assigned route, but it's going to be a full-time drive every day for us type of a job. So it changes the equation with who might be interested in these jobs, because it's no longer come work when we need you and we give you a call. It's you now have this job in Jeffco. So what this represents, and the budget team and the HR team and Steve's team has worked diligently to try and make this as cost-effective as we possible, but it's the differential between what we already pay to have our substitutes driving with bringing more of them on into ongoing jobs. We'll continue to push on that concept and do that to the extent we can afford it. But this represents what could not be afforded through the Transportation Department. Now, I know in talking to the transportation team, your team's also doing work this summer to, in fact, look at route consolidation. How can we do things more efficiently? These are things we do all the time, every year, in every one of our departments to try and make sure that we're leveraging the resources we have as efficiently and effectively as possible. So that gives a little bit more context to what's a pretty big number. And these are FTE counts that we already have being transferred into this more robust hiring pattern.
So I want to, boy, these are hard things to even say in public at the board table, to be frank with you. I don't like saying this, but, you know, if bus drivers and if substitute pay is high on our priority list, that's $1 million in round numbers. I'm not adding them up. It's $1 million in round numbers. So then you look at, well, where in the budget that we have previously directed can we find $1 million? And I personally would say, well, there are two places. We can go to the capital asset increase. We increased that from $500,000 to $1 million at our meeting last Thursday night. That's a $500,000 allocation that we made into the capital side of the house last Thursday. The only other place that I see those kinds of dollars easily attainable would be to go into the $2.3 million SBB school improvement fund. So I guess the question is, from a values point of view and an impact on the organization, do we want to go either of those places? And which amount are we looking for? Are we looking for $100,000 on substitute pay, or are we looking for $1 million on both bus drivers and substitutes pay?
And thank you, Ron. That's the exact conversation that we did not have from the board table last Thursday. So as I was sitting there as a board member, that we have $2.3 million and we had things that we were cutting from recommendations, this is the dialogue that we did not have. And as difficult as that dialogue is,
it is.
I feel that that is one to some degree that we need to have, and so thank you for this opportunity to tease out at least two of those items while we're looking at that, rather than looking at that just as one proposed thing. I appreciate that lens, and it is a difficult dialogue to have.
And I think we already said yes to the substitute teacher.
We did.
Right? Okay.
Yes. We did.
So we don't need to talk about that again.
We may have said yes to it, but I don't think we decided where we're going to get it. And
Brad's suggestion was to remove the
$2.3 to 2.
Yeah, the school improvement fund goes from 2.3 to 2.2.
We have now directed, I just want us all on the same page. We have now directed our budget team to reduce the 2.3 to 2.2 and put $100,000 into long-term substitute increase. Is that, I believe there's general direction around the table that we do that.
I think that represents the consensus of the direction.
Yes.
Okay, so let's leave that one behind us then, and then we ask the question, do we want to, delve into the budget?
And that was kind of, I know in the past.
On the other situation, yeah. Which is about a $900,000 price tag, round numbers.
Got it.
Go ahead.
Now, I know in the past when we've been struggling with these types of things, and that's why I wanted the detail, whether that is the number to have an impact, to your point, as opposed to, is there anything else we could do when we're moving these things around to have an impact? And if that is the number, then that's the number. And I think Amy answered that for purposes of the substitute teachers, and I just didn't know, as we're fleshing this out, if there's any other information we needed on that.
Amy can, and Steve wants to get into, when we pay steps, lanes, and quartiles, we're impacting existing bus driver wages with that, aren't we?
We're influencing existing bus driver wages once the JESPA team settles, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a question I had, too.
So with your, going back to your macro level here, your steps, lanes, and quartiles, your 3% COLA, that's positively impacting those employees, too. Okay. Steve, did you have something you wanted to weigh in on?
Just a couple of clarifying points for the board as you talk about this. I think Amy was very detailed in explaining this is about us being competitive with our ability to recruit, hire, and retain bus drivers. That's what we're doing here. Currently, there are four districts in the metro area that are doing this, which gives them an advantage over us right now: Denver, Boulder, Aurora, and Littleton. So we're at a little bit of a disadvantage. That's one point. Second is, for us to implement this would cost us about twice this number. This is a phased-in approach, which was a result of our cabinet discussions. You know, when I come to cabinet and say, well, I got a $1.7 million deal here, and it's, that gets attention. So the ultimate decision was that we would phase it in, and we would do it with 50% of the cost going forward. Those are two points I just wanted to clarify with you. It's about us being competitive, and it's not a small number.
Is the 26 number accurate? 800,000 represents 26 part-time positions moving to full-time positions, or is that half of the 26?
No, that is half of our need, but it is 26.
Thank you.
26 and half of what we really need.
Correct.
Steve, I'm going to ask you a hard question because I don't like asking you this question, but it's a hard question that is going through my mind that I think I have to deal with right now. We allocated an additional $500,000 in capital. We know that's a positive thing. We could allocate an additional $5 million or, frankly, $500 million, and that would be a real positive impact. So I'm not denying that there's a positive impact there. But I think when we look at this, we are almost trying to prioritize competitiveness in the transportation department versus a small increase in the capital department. Would you care to comment on that? Because that's a decision that I think is before us.
I'd say you're right. I guess my comment would be, since those are both under my umbrella purview, you're asking if I would like to rob myself to pay myself. No, I don't like either one of those choices. I do understand. Now, let me echo a comment that our superintendent made last week, which I think is accurate. And that is, in our capital needs district-wide is how we manage our physical plant, both existing and new needs that we have. $500,000, does it help us? Sure, it helps us. Does it help a lot given the grand scheme of things? Not really. Now, don't take that as my saying, gee, I'd go ahead and give up that money, but I'm just saying, in the reality is, and Dr. Glass made this point, and it's true, if we look at the grand scheme of things, that's not a really big number. It isn't.
I also want to point out that that's a number that at least that does drive some dollars to investments that help keep kids safe, warm, and dry. I want to ensure that as we distribute our dollars, we hold student impact as a high priority.
Board members, as you talk about this in discussion amongst yourself, let me assure you that our facilities will be warm, safe, and dry for our students. We will not put students in jeopardy in any way, ever.
So we have taken care of one of the issues. It appears to me we have one before us.
The struggle that you're having is the same one that we had at cabinet. It's a big number. So you have to give up a lot to make that happen.
Yes.
I would also say I want to honor the vetting process that went on internally and say that I'd like to hold our priorities as they're currently articulated.
Okay. Well, And I would kind of second what...
Yeah. You mean recommendations?
The recommendations that exist currently with SBB equity at 2.2 to incorporate the opportunity to give a raise to long-term substitute teaching and not shift dollars out of priorities currently to move dollars into transportation pay.
And there's a... The side of me, I want to second what Ms. Stevens just said, because there is a side of me that believes that we did good work last Thursday night, and frankly, I was satisfied with it. Now, given that, we just altered that by $100,000. I'm also satisfied with that. Don't misunderstand me. But as I came in today to today's meeting, I came in with a feeling that we had worked hard last Thursday night, we did the best we could, and I could live with the outcome.
You know, I think we did good work Thursday night too, and I think we're doing better work today by being more thorough and thoughtful with our taxpayer dollars that we have an opportunity to use. So I'm happy that we're able to have this discussion because those are things
sure.
we didn't discuss.
I agree with that.
That we needed to.
Yep.
I'm
happy to leave things as they are beyond the subpay.
I also want to really, every year we say, let's hold that priority because we didn't get to do everything mm-hmm. we wanted to do. That's true this year as well, even though it's a less awful year. We need to say it again. We are not releasing these priorities. We are not forgetting that this continues to be an ongoing need. What do I hope? I hope next year we have adequate, equitable funding for kids that is sustainable for decades. That will take something very different than what we have right now. All of this work is the right work. It's not all accessible yet.
Agreed. I'm hearing around the table that we are where we need to be, and we're satisfied with the direction that we have given to our superintendent and staff to develop next year's budget. Are there any of us who are not totally comfortable with that statement?
I'm not, and I'm just going to say one more thing, and then I'll be done, because I think I'll be in the minority. But I just want to say for the record, this is a wicked, one of your wicked decisions. While I don't believe that, you know, I feel like that 2.2 equity is very important, and we're not there, and I love that we continue to work with that every year, and you guys bring us recommendations to make it better with SBB. I just want to say that I believe that transportation is very important. Our bus drivers are the first person our students see every single day, and the last person they see coming back from school. And if we need more to be competitive, I trust, you know, this is a wicked decision, but I think that's a priority.
So I just want to kind of highlight where some of what equity looks like currently, with a recognition that, again, we're doing a great deal with constraints, and that is to Jeffco's credit, and I appreciate the educators and leaders who make that happen. When it comes to dollars directed for flexible spending, with a recognition that these schools working with these kids know them well and know a lot of what they need to do, some of which they simply can't afford, to have a $2.2 million investment, we are allowing those schools to realize about $88 additional for every free and reduced lunch student. Not every student in their building, but every free, if it's distributed simply by that model. We also utilized a mill levy override equalization factor that will send $316, one of those two, to every free and reduced lunch student in an charter school. So I would argue that right now we should hold our commitment to $2.2 million in the SBB equity, even though it may not be distributed in exactly the same way, because I believe that those schools know how to spend those dollars to do good work for their kids.
And so since we're all weighing in, I will join Ms. LaSalle in the minority, and I think it's more of a process thing for me. When I see things removed from cabinet recommendations and then all of a sudden we seem to go a different direction on a $2.3 million, this process of dialogue was critically important to me, and it may have ended up differently had this rolled out differently. And I share responsibility for that as a board member in terms of that piece. But and again, all wicked decisions, but I think we have been hearing about bus drivers and challenges we've had and the impact on our students constantly for quite a long time. And so I would like to see us be able to do something about that, but appreciate that, you know, we have to give direction and we need to move forward. But that's where I am.
Any other comments?
Are we aiming for consensus?
I don't know what I think we needed to give direction so that by the time it comes back to us.
Right, we're aiming for direction. I actually think if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly, we probably have that direction, and none of us are 100% uncomfortable or totally comfortable with that. You know what? I was Saturday, I went to the bus driver's rodeo. I like the work they're doing, and yes, I would like to see the funds there increased. I will tell you that right now. I had it on my list last Thursday. It's still on my list, but at some point, we have to provide the direction, live with the wicked choices that we're forced to make, and move forward. So in terms of moving forward, I'm okay, and I think the majority of the board is saying they're okay with the direction that we've provided. Now, if I've misread that, you know, you better wake me up. I know that there are at least three of us who do think that we wish we could do something with transportation, but I'm not convinced that we are ready to lower the capital allocation or the school improvement allocation. I don't hear that. I think we have a direction that we're not entirely happy with, Dr. Glass, but at least we are moving forward into the next school year with a budget direction.
Thank you. Well, you should be somewhat happy about this. I mean, this is a great, and all of the years that I've had working as a superintendent in Colorado, we've never had this much to work with. This is really positive and exciting what we're going to be able to do for our kids and our schools and our staff with this. So thank you.
Okay. And on that note, this study session is adjourned, surprisingly, at 12:05. We can all be pleased with that, too.
Okay.